Hello and welcome to Sleeping Giants, the East Anglian Daily Times and Ipswich Stars sports podcast. Big wins don't come around that often for Ipswich Town, but a 3-0 win on Saturday was certainly a much-needed tonic to the club's recent woes. To look back at that result and preview next weekend's Bristol City match is our chief football writer Stuart Watson. And we've spoken before, Stuart, about Ipswich never really getting thumped, but never handing out a thumping either. And they certainly managed to move away from that on Saturday, didn't they?
Yeah, I think it was the biggest home win in almost 2 years, which is quite telling, sort of backs up what you've just said there. To be honest, it could have been double that scoreline quite easily. Really one-sided finish. QPR fell to pieces in the last, well, since the third goal went in, to be honest. Ironically, the goalkeeper, Alex Smithies, who made the terrible mistake for the second goal, actually sort of prevented it being an embarrassing scoreline in the end with a few saves. Funnily enough, we'd been speaking to Mick McCarthy before the game about second game syndrome and how he'd won his first game in charge of Ipswich and then they got thumped 5-0 at Palace. Interesting side note, Holloway was Palace manager then, so he was hoping, you know, he semi-joked, or maybe we're due a 5-0 win, and do you know what, it almost was. So yeah, great win, and as you say, a much needed tonic, really.
What were the key points of the positives and the key battles that Ipswich managed to win in the game, which enabled them to get that 3-0 win? Obviously, Luke Varney won a fairly easy battle with Alex Smithies partway through the game for that second goal, but more out on the pitch, where were the places that Ipswich were just better than their opponents?
Do you know what? It was a fairly close game. I know we've just been talking about how the scoreline could have been bigger and whatnot, but it sounds a fairly glib thing to say, but I think the nature and the timing of goals that you score or concede obviously has a big impact on the game. I think you look back at the Nottingham Forest match, to concede so early after kickoff and just before half time really knocked the stuffing out of Ipswich, and it was boot on the other foot territory against QPR. The nature of that second goal, as I say, I think really killed off any of their spirit. In terms of sort of key battles, I think the main thing was that they just got back to being, went back to basics, back to what's the successful ingredients of a Mick McCarthy Ipswich Town side, in terms of just running around a lot and being energetic and showing a bit of fight. And that was all worryingly lacking in the first half against Forest, and it was back in abundance at the weekend. I thought Cole Skuse typified that. He was back to his best, running around, making tackles, covering. I know the team selection with Douglas and Varney, you know, two 34-year-olds coming back in for Bishop and Sears, wasn't exactly popular on social media beforehand. There was a sense of, you know, Mick going back to his tried and trusted, and that it was going to be another sort of boring 0-0 on the horizon, but it did make Ipswich a lot more solid, and it did put a bit of fight and a bit of steel into the spine of the side, and it meant that they competed first and foremost, and when you win those battles, it gives you a platform to build on. And you know, there's no getting away from the fact that all three goals had an element of fortune in them, but they were due a bit of fortune, and can't take anything away from the win.
Oh, you mentioned the lineup and the fact that a lot of fans felt it was quite a negative team selection before the game. Obviously afterwards might have tainted that slightly on a positive side, but bringing a player like Luke Varney in, who was probably mostly there for being more of a physical presence than David McGoldrick, doing hold up play, did it bring out better performances from some of the other players around Varney and Douglas, because they might have been freed up a bit more to do some more creative stuff? I know McGoldrick didn't score in the end, and Varney did, but was McGoldrick getting more of the ball, getting in more scoring opportunities because of the fact that he had a so-called bigger man to play with, rather than a more similar player perhaps in Freddie Sears?
Yeah, undoubtedly. I think Varney especially, that was very obvious against Forest that they missed a focal point in attack. They missed a bit of a target man. McGoldrick and Sears, both fantastic players in their own right, but didn't really work as a front two against Forest, because I think Freddie Sears is so accustomed now to having played wide, or even when he's up front, he's expected to run the channels and do all the donkey work that he was sort of, you know, doing the running into the channels over towards the corner flag and all over the place. David McGoldrick, as we all know, likes to drop deep and virtually becomes a midfielder at times, and it didn't really leave a focal point to the attack. So Luke Varney, his presence completely changed that. Douglas, how much did sort of he change things? Maybe his presence allowed Cole Skuse to free up, you know, and feel like he didn't have the entire weight of the sort of defensive role. I'm not too sure about that one. I just think Cole Skuse had a poor day, along with many others, at the office against Forest, and that was just a case of him being back to his best. So they both brought something to the table, but I guess ultimately you'll say they're both 34 years old and they're not the long-term answer. But I thought Varney's performance in particular made a difference.
Was the style of play still that more attacking, more free-flowing style that Mick McCarthy's trying to move the team towards, or had it reverted back to trying to send in long passes and bypass the midfield because they have the two more defensively minded players in Skuse and Douglas?
I think they definitely went back to what they know a little bit more. It wasn't, don't get me wrong, it wasn't sort of, you know, entirely sort of long ball, hoof ball, football, whatever you want to call it. But they certainly did go back to maybe being a little bit more direct, looking to sort of turn the opposition defence early. And just generally being, you know, pressing the ball quicker and a lot more energy. Going back to what they know, as I say, I guess with Mick McCarthy, you can say during his 4 years, I think there's been points, definite points in time where he's tried to evolve the style of play and add a little bit more flair, guile, whatever you want to call it, and just slightly alter the balance of his team and progress from those solid foundations. And whenever there's been any kind of major setback, and I'm thinking about Reading 5-1 away in the early part of last season, sticks in the memory, it's almost like it slammed the brakes on, and then it's like, you know, well, we better go back to what we know here. And there was a feeling that it was a bit like that on Saturday, both with the team selection and the style of play. And listen, if that's what works, and if that's so hardwired into the team, and if it gets results like Saturday, then there's nothing wrong with that. And I don't think fans will be too disappointed if it yields results on a regular basis. Time will tell if that's the case.
Luke Varney spoke about making that sort of performance on Saturday the norm at Portman Road, being able to go out there and put in those battling performances which result in quite comfortable wins. But given what we've just spoken about and Town's recent history, how likely is it that we're going to be seeing 3-0, even 2-0 wins in the future at Portman Road and away?
Yeah, it's not so much the nature, it's not so much the margin of victories that I think people are too worried about. It's just the overall performance and the overall entertainment value, which has just been so badly lacking at Portman Road. Ian Holloway's sort of become the latest in a long line of pundits, ex-players, to have kind of told off the Ipswich fans like naughty schoolboys for sort of being careful what you wish for. And he had a bit of a pop at, I don't know whether he was having a pop at us as the media in general or at the Ipswich fans, but saying, come on, remember where you were 4 years ago, etc., etc. I don't really buy that from the pundits and ex-managers, because I think they're treating sort of football fans as if they're idiots who don't know anything. Now, they're not going to the games week in, week out, you know, and I think the Ipswich fan who's been a season ticket holder or has been to, excuse me, virtually every game for the last year has every right to be frustrated and disappointed and unhappy with the footballing fare that's been dished up. And Christoph Berra last week sort of said on three or four occasions in his 15-minute interview with us that, come on, we're not world beaters, let's be realistic here, we're going to lose some games. And I didn't think that was really the right tone to be taking. Again, with fans aren't stupid, they're not expecting Ipswich to be Real Madrid or Bayern Munich, as he suggested. They're just want their team to turn up and play with energy and give them something to get behind. There's not been enough of that this calendar year. They deserved the criticism after the Forest performance, and they deserve all the praise that that they're getting after the QPR performance. So can they, to go back to your initial point, can they do that on a regular basis? Let's hope so, because there's just been no momentum this season. Every time they get a good win and everyone wants them to kick on, it always seems to just fall flat. You know, at the moment you're expecting a corner to be turned. So they've got a good chance to do that at Bristol City on Saturday for sure.
We mentioned briefly, obviously, Ian Holloway and what he said about McCarthy and what he's done in the 4 years following the match. And we ran a poll on our website after that to ask our readers and Ipswich fans what they thought of that, whether they agreed with Holloway. And actually, after that, it came out that most people did agree with what Ian Holloway was saying, that you've got to remember what Mick was sort of presented with 4 years ago, what he's done in the time, the progress that has been made. There's a bit of a contrast there to the sort of reaction we get after a loss. Is it because of the win that a lot of the people who comment on forums and message boards and our website after a defeat were silenced by the result and shows that perhaps that is still a minority?
Maybe. I mean, there's always the debate, isn't there, that it's the vocal minority. If Ipswich had lost on Saturday or even drawn or it had been a poor performance, then I think people would have been queuing up to criticise Mick because of that team selection. he'd really sort of heaped pressure on himself with the team that he picked with Douglas and Varney. And you've got to admire, you know, the fact that he has got absolute conviction in what he does, and you know he's got the experience in the game to see that he felt that that's what's required. And we have to say, you know, hold our hands up and say fair play, he got it right at the weekend. I mean, Ian Holloway's quotes very much seem to be someone that was trying to speak on behalf of Mick. You know, my reading of it is, and I might be reading too much into this, that, you know, both managers have talked about how they're very good mates in the game, so they obviously have fairly candid discussions behind the scenes. And Ian Holloway seemed to be sort of pointing the finger of blame at Marcus Evans and saying, you know, come on, if you've got to be criticising the right person here, and Mick's had to sell all of his best players and he's been working on a limited budget. So whether Mick says anything behind the scenes to his colleagues and fellow managers that, you know, I'm really struggling to work on a shoestring budget here, maybe he does. But if that is the case, then he should be coming out and saying that publicly, because he's asked about this on a regular basis. You know, what, you know, is he restricted by his budget? Does, how often does he speak to Marcus Evans about money? You know, is there a limit to how far he can take them with the spending that he's got? And his answer every time is always the same. It's, I knew the gig when I got it. You know, I don't moan about what I haven't got. I get the best out of what I have. Maybe he's just trying to sort of, you know, I suppose if he came out and said, you know, I need more, and he might feel that that's a bit of a slight on the players he's got and dismotivates them, and it's all part of the man management technique. But I think if he let on a little bit more, some of his frustrations about budget to the fans, that they would have a lot more time for him. There would be a lot more latitude. I did say at the start of this season, when we're doing these podcasts, that this could really be written off almost as a transitional season for the club. And if Mick had come out and said, look, I'm working on a limited budget, I'm trying to sort of build another team for the future, I've gone out and I've signed a 21-year-old Adam Webster, a 21-year-old Grant Ward, we're focusing on the academy, we're trying to evolve the style of play, that would have got everybody on board, and regardless of results, even some performances, I think everyone would have seen what the plan is going forward. But there's been none of that conversation, so we have to take it at face value. And Mick saying he's happy with the situation, so I think that's why a lot of the criticism has switched from Evans to Mick in recent times. And I'm not really sure, I don't think anyone's really sure who to blame, because we don't get any sort of word from the very top, from Marcus. And Mick is very guarded on what he says, so it's hard to know what the sort of overall picture is, really.
Getting back to the fixture list, is the Bristol City game this weekend going to be a good opportunity for Town to start stringing some positive results together, or is it a bit too close to call? I mean, they're 14th and 13th, Town and Bristol respectively, in the table at the moment, both on 24 points and separated only by Bristol City having a positive goal difference of just +2 to Ipswich's zero at the moment. So is that the sort of match where we can see a bit of a banana skin for Town, or will they be buoyed by having had quite a good victory at the weekend to then go on, push on and try and get what they can out of the Bristol away game?
Well, as you say, it's typically congested championship table. We've been getting sort of het up about where Ipswich are in the table, but if they get 3 points at the weekend, they could potentially catch Norwich, who were top not so long ago, and they're free falling at the moment. So it can change very quickly, and there's, you know, all the cliches. It's what you've got on May the whatever that counts. Marathon, not a sprint, etc., etc. But talking about Bristol City, started off like a train. Tammy Abraham on loan from Chelsea was scoring goals for fun, but they've faltered recently. I haven't got the stats to hand here, but it's been sort of one win in eight or something along those lines. 7 points from a possible quite a few off the day. So it might not be a bad time to go down there, but I remember Ipswich going to Bristol City last season, and that was one of their poorest performances. Aidan Flint scored two carbon copy headers from corners, and that was one of a really flat display, I think, around February time. So yes, in answer to your question, it is a fantastic opportunity to kick on, but we've said that plenty of times before. I thought going into off the back of the Sheffield Wednesday win, I thought that was a really good chance to beat Forest, and I thought that was a genuine turning point then. So the frustrating thing with Ipswich is just when you think, you know, there's expectation that they're going to win, they always seem to fall flat. And then when there's sort of real doom and gloom feeling, as there was, I think many people were going, oh, we're going to lose to QPR now, and lo and behold, they win 3-0. So they're certainly keeping us guessing at the moment, and consistency and stringing some results together is what's really going to kind of unite people, because at the moment, even off the back of a 3-0 win, I still sense that there's quite a few people feeling fairly pessimistic.
I think as well there's a stat for this season that Ipswich haven't managed to string back-to-back wins together, so presumably that would be a nice monkey to get off the back.
Yeah, twice this calendar year I think they've done that, and not at all this season, so that tells you everything about consistency this year.
There we go then. So hopefully that one will be dispelled come 5 o'clock on Saturday at Bristol City. That's all we've got time for on this week's Sleeping Giants. You can join us again, of course, next week after that match for what we hope will be more good news for Town fans, and of course a preview of the Cardiff City home game, which takes place the following Saturday. Thanks to Stuart, and thanks for listening.